see why November 6, 1991 Parshas told us.
Good evening, everybody. Parshat Toldot. Let's start at the beginning of the Seder, and we will make a number of comments as we go through it. And there may even be a theme that is going to unite the various comments that we're going to make. Theme, on some level, the theme is one of the age-old problems that stands in the very center of world politics, and it has been there for the longest time. It does not seem that there is any real solution to the problem. There have been many studies that have been made and conferences, many books have been written, a vast amount of literature that deals with one single phenomenon in the world, and that is anti-Semitism. In all of the studies that have been made and all of the approaches that have been taken, they have been able to deal with isolated aspects of the problem. But no one has truly been able to achieve a full and complete understanding where does this come from and what is the solution for it. If there is a solution, in different countries of the world and in different periods of time, the Jew was always accused of something. In capitalist societies, he was the communist. In communist societies, he was the capitalist. Jews are the ones that poisoned the wells. Jews are either very rich or very poor. The media are in the hands of Jews. The insurance companies and the banks. In different countries and in different places, there have been all sorts of attempts at explaining why there's anti-Semitism. I think it wasn't it De Gaulle who said we're too aggressive and we're too pushy. Jews shouldn't be that aggressive. And we've been told all sorts of things throughout history. Time magazine this week says here it was Shamir's great moment, and he blew it. Depends, of course, on your point of view. Here in Eretz Israel, I don't think we looked at the Shamir's address in Madrid as though he blew it. But everybody has a different approach, and certainly when it comes to Jews, we have been at the center stage, and what has been done to Jews has not been done to any other people in history. And so there are those who will cite economic, nationalistic, and social factors. They may serve as oil on the fire, but do not explain the source. Where does it come from? History has shown that all of the many explanations simply fell by the wayside. There is no one thing that we can say that this is it. This is why the world hates us all. So let's take a look. What is it that Torah has to say about it, if anything? Well, let's begin the Seder. And we're going to search. We're going to search the Seder for an approach, a Torah approach to anti-Semitism. Vela told of Yitzchak ben Avraham, these are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. Avram, holidic Yitzchak, Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. The word Toldot can mean not only generations, but it can also mean history. And in the life of Yitzchak, we're going to see that a great deal of Jewish history is lived by Yitzchak. And it will be an indication, as the Rambam told us earlier, Kol Mashi Ida La'avos, whatever happened to the fathers, was a siman, it was an indication what will happen to the children. So here it is, the history of Yitzchak. Yitzchak ben Arboim Shana, Yitzchak was 40 years old, Bekachto et Rivka, when he took Rivka, the daughter of Betuel Ha'arami, Mipadan Aram, the sister of Lavan Ha'arami, Lo Le'isha. She was barren. Vayeta Yitzchak L'Hashem L'Noch Achishto, Yitzchak prayed to God opposite his wife, Ki Akorahi Vayeyater Lo Hashem, and God answered his prayer, Vatar Rivka Ishto, and his wife Rivka became pregnant. Vayidrotsu Abanim Bekirba, the sons struggled within her. She doesn't know what's happening. All she knows is that she is suffering. Vatoma, and she said, in Cain, if so, Lama Zanorchi, why do I need all of this? Vatelech, she went Lidrosh at Hashem. She went to seek the guidance of Hashem. This Pasuk Chav Gimel. Vayomer Hashem la, and God said to her, Shnei Goyim Bebitneich, there are two nations in your stomach, Ushnei Lu'umim, and two peoples, Mimei Ayich, from your innards, Yiparedu, are going to separate. Ula'om Mil'om Ye'ematz, one national entity is going to be stronger than the other. And as the Gemara points out, it means there are times at which Yerushalayim is ascendant, and there are times at which Rome is ascendant. At times it's Eretz Yisrael, at times it's Tzor. Different civilizations and different societies that are in conflict with Klal Yisrael, and one rises and the other falls. The Gemara says that the nations of the world can rise only on the fall of Israel. And Israel rises at their fall. What is she being told? She is being told that there are two children in your womb, and there is going to be an ongoing struggle between the two of them. What's Torah telling us? What we're being told here is that the struggle begins before there's any territory involved. The struggle begins before there are banks, and before there are insurance companies, and before there's capitalism, and before there's communism. These two are locked in battle. It's a struggle, an eternal struggle, or a near eternal struggle. How does Rashi describe it? Rashi describes it that when she would pass by the Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'eva, it was Yaakov who wanted to get out. And when she would pass by the temples of pagans and heathens, there was Esau who wanted to get out. Which means that at the very root of the struggle is the fact that we are Jews. It is a religious struggle. It is a struggle over religion. Totally unrelated to all of the other phenomenon in the world. Nothing to do with money, nothing to do with territory, nothing to do with a Jewish nose, nothing whatsoever. The struggle begins before they are born, and the Rashi, it's a Chazal, a Medrash, that the struggle is of a religious nature. We talked about an Avraham Avinu, who is the great intellect, the revolutionary, who brings to the world the idea of a one invisible God. The fact is that for 1,500 or 2,000 years, the world stood in absolute opposition to Judaism. What was born from Judaism? The two illegitimate children are Christianity and Islam. But they have never fully embraced the belief in God that we know of, and therefore the struggle continues at its very root and its very heart. This is the battle between the Jew and the entire world. And despite the fact that the struggle goes on, there is no way for that non-Jewish, the Gentile world out there, to be able to say that they were not affected by Klal Yisrael. Judaism has had a tremendous impact on the world. Yes, we talk about the two great religions that were born out of Judaism. So Christianity sees itself as the New Testament, but everything is based on the original Torah. The fundamental principles of ethics and morality that appear in the world's major religions all came from Judaism. Which means though there is an ongoing struggle, but we have had
a powerful impact on the world. When you talk about morality and ethics, you can't say Christian alone. It's Judeo-Christian. The fact is that, yes, both Christianity and Islam believe in a one invisible God. Where did they get this? Where did it come from? It didn't come from all the pagan and heathen nations that inhabited the world. This was clearly and solely the influence of Klal Yisrael. But they're not ready to go all the way. We therefore became the conscience of the world. We therefore became the guilty conscience of the world. We therefore became those who in a sense have guided and directed humanity for the last 2,000-3,000 years. Since they are unwilling to go all the way or unwilling to admit the debt that they owe to Klal Yisrael. So therefore, the struggle continues. As far as we are concerned, we know how the struggle is going to end. We know when it's all over precisely what's going to happen. What do they tell Rivka? The Rav Ya'avod Sa'ir. The end of the pasuk is, after the years of confrontation, Rav, the older one, is going to be subservient before the younger one. Vayimlu Yamel Aledet. Her days were finished and complete to give birth, and behold, Tomim, there are twins in her womb. Vayetzi Hadishan Admoni, the first one came out red, Kulo Kaderet Seyar, like a cloak, a hairy cloak. Vayikru Shmo Esav, they called him Esav. Va'acharechein Yotza Achiv, afterwards came out his brother, V'yodo Ochezet Ba'kev Esav. This is the story of the last 2,000 years. Esav would want to go off in all directions, but there's something that holds him back. There's the brother who holds on to his heel. He can't go off in all directions. He's not able to break out because something holds him back. And what is it that holds him back? It's Yaakov. Yaakov brings a message to the world that the world cannot reject in its entirety. On the contrary, the world has for all intents and purposes embraced the message of Yaakov. But the struggle continues. It means, therefore, that what is Rivka being told? Rivka is being told that the spiritual superiority of Yaakov is already determined at the very outset. The footsteps of Esav are measured according to the beat, the rhythm of Yaakov. Yodo achezet pakev Yaakov. If you will, we can go one step further. The measure of the world's morality is how they treat Yaakov. The measure of Esav is Yaakov. The one who holds on to him, holds him back, that's Yaakov. The Jew or the Jewish issue stands at the crossroads and at every major turning point in history. When empires fall, somewhere the Jew is involved in the fall of every empire. I'm always fond of quoting great Roman historian Cicero, who said, when Judea rebels, the entire Roman Empire quakes. Judea was one of the smallest states that made up a massive empire that covered the inhabited world. And when Judea rebelled, the entire Roman Empire quaked. I would say that we certainly can say that we saw it in our own days when a major empire, the Russian Empire, the Communist Empire, the first voice of rebellion, the first voice that fought back, Jews. Yeah, we fought back with 2, 4, 6, 8, open up the Iron Gate,
we marched, and our marching was very small compared to the tremendous sacrifices that were made by Jews living there. But it began with the Jewish issue. Sure, listen, let's look at ourselves. The United States would not give favored nation status for years to Russia only because of the question of Jewish emigration. Major empires fell somewhere. In all of their fall, we find the Jew. So that clearly, at the very outset, we are told that the struggle begins from the womb. The struggle is a struggle of a spiritual nature. And we know that the end is going to be Rav Yavod Zoya. After that, his brother came out, and he was holding on to him. They called him Yaakov. Yitzchak was 60 years old when they were born. The boys grew up. Esav was a man who knew how to hunt. Ish Sadeh, man of the field. Yaakov Ishtam. Yaakov was a complete personality. Yoshev Oholim, who lived in the tents of Torah. Vayehav Yitzchak as Esav. Yitzchak loved Esav Kitzayed Befiv, because that which he hunted was in his mouth, or that he hunted him with his mouth. Rivka Ohevet et Yaakov, and Rivka loved Yaakov. Vayozet Yaakov Nazid, Vayovo Esav min hasodeh v'hu ayef, and Yaakov cooked lentils, and Esav came from the field and he was exhausted. Vayomer Esav el Yaakov, Esav said to Yaakov, Halitenina min ha'adam ha'adam hazeh. Halitenina means to stuff me or fill me with that red stuff because I'm exhausted. Al kein koro shemo Edom, therefore he called his name Edom. Now, whenever we learn Tanakh, we always have to be careful of nuances, a word, a phrase. Here, a number of things are troubling. Yaakov cooked lentils. Now, Torah does not describe to us mundane, everyday kind of things. They will not tell us that Avram got up in the morning and he said Moda Ani, and then he had a cup of coffee, and he went off to the field or whatever. Mundane things simply are not told to us by Torah unless they are of great significance. So what is this cooking of lentils? Yaakov has become a cook, and we even have to know what it is that he is cooking. More than that, there's a phrase that's extremely troubling. How do you understand Al kein koro shemo Edom, therefore he called his name Edom? Who called whose name Edom? Here Esav comes in and he says, stuff me with that red stuff. Al kein, therefore, koro shemo Edom, he called his name Edom. Who called him Edom? Yaakov is not a subject in the pasuk. Sorry, it can't be Yaakov. The only other person, Hashem is not mentioned in the pasuk either. The only person who's mentioned in the pasuk is Esav. Yeah, the only one who's acting in the pasuk. The only one who is active in the pasuk. The only one who's doing something in the pasuk. If it would have been Yaakov, then we would have to say, okay, therefore, Yaakov called him Edom. But let's even try to understand that. What does it mean? Because he wanted the red stuff, so Yaakov called him Edom. And then, you know, Yaakov made sure that everybody else would call him Edom. And before you knew it, he's Edom. And what does it mean that Esav called himself? If we are to learn that it means Esav called himself Edom, what does that mean? He went out into the street and he collared the first fellow he saw in the street. You know, I came into the house, I was exhausted, my brother was cooking this red stuff. I asked him, fill me up with this red stuff, call me red. So I'll tell you, I want to take you on a little flight of fancy. Even though I'm beginning to think it may not be as fanciful as I thought it is, it may very well indeed be close to the pshat of what is taking place here. And it may have contemporary significance as well. I'm going to paint a picture to you.
Rashi tells it to us. It comes from Chazal. Why is Yaakov cooking lentils that day? Gemara says that it was the day on which Avraham Avinu died. It was the Levaya, the day of the Levaya. Upon the return from the Levaya, the halacha is you have to make a Sudas Havrah for the Avelim. Yaakov is the one who's cooking the Sudat Havrah. What are you supposed to eat? So he says, halacha says you're supposed to eat things that are round. We use eggs, hard-boiled eggs. What's the significance or the symbolism of something that's round? That death is something that continues to happen in the world. It's galgal hachozer ba'olam. It's something that's happening. In a sense, it's part of life. So Yaakov is cooking the lentils. He's preparing the Sudas Havrah. His father is going to come home from the cemetery. Let me paint the picture. Gemara tells us that when Avraham Avinu died, Malchei Mizrach Umarav, the kings of East and West, came to be present at that funeral. The Gemara even tells us what they said. Oiloi woe, oilam woe to a world share of ad manhigov, that her manhig, leader, is lost. Oilo l'sfina, woe to a boat she'ovad kvarnita, the captain of the ship of state is gone. Remember in last week's Seder we learned how did B'nai Chet refer to Avram? Nesi Elokim ata b'tochenu, you are a prince of God in our midst. The world came to the funeral. We're talking about a royal funeral. We've seen pictures of this. Representatives of the whole world come. So I imagine the picture that I have in my mind is the following. On the way to the cemetery, they're taking Avram. And there you have the kings of the world behind the casket. And I don't know, maybe the king of the Canaanite turns to the king of the Amori and he asks him, like, who's that following the coffin? Oh, don't you know that's Yitzchak, the son? Yeah, I know Yitzchak. Who's that woman there? That's his daughter-in-law, Rivka from Padan Aram. There's a boy walking behind. That's Yaakov. Wait a minute. Didn't they have twins? Where's the other one? I don't know. Maybe he's someplace in the crowd. They keep going through the streets of Hebron on the way to the Moras HaMachpelah. And people are beginning to wonder. Where is Esav? They have another son by the name of Esav. He's most probably at the Moras HaMachpelah already preparing the grave. They come to the Moras HaMachpelah. No sign of Esav. Funeral is over. They return home. Yaakov is preparing the Sudas Havrah. And the Gemara even describes how Malchei Mizrach Umarav stand around the tent paying homage to Avraham. And then off in the distance, hoofbeats, giddyap, a horseman someplace out in the distance, you see him kicking up all sorts of dust, and before you know it he comes galloping in, gets off his horse, comes into the tent. So we would have expected that he'd walk over to his father, he'd say, Pa, I'm really sorry to hear that Zaidi died. He'd say a nice word to somebody. And here you understand an entire world is watching. An entire world is watching. He comes running in, and the only thing you hear coming from outside of the tent is, give me some of that red stuff. Al Kain Koro Shemo Edom means he called his name Edom. People give themselves a name by virtue of the way in which they conduct themselves. Nobody really gives anybody else a name. Al Kain Koro Shemo Edom, there it was, the Knani, the Prizi, the Amori, they were all standing outside. Malchei Mizrach Umarav. With this as the background, and now we can understand what Chazal tell us, that on that day he was over Kol Aveiros Sheba'olam. All sorts of terrible things Esav did on that day.
terrible things.
Can we understand now why Yaakov, in a feeble attempt at saving the dignity of the family, says, "Listen, Esav, sell me your birthright. You obviously don't want to be part of this family." But there's more that's taking place over here. You may have wondered, is it possible for a person really to embarrass himself in front of a whole world? Don't people have a certain degree of shame and embarrassment? That's certain things you just don't do. You just don't do before the whole world. If you would have asked that question a few weeks ago, then I don't know if I could have answered it. But if you ask it now, we had an event that took place last week. The whole world watched and saw it. I'm certain that when the Syrian foreign minister took out the wanted sign for Yitzhak Shamir and described that he's 158 centimeters or something like that, in order to hit Shamir below the belt, you have to get down very low. I had a feeling when I took a look at Baker, if he could have dug a hole and disappeared there, he would have done so. This clearly was unacceptable conduct in the eyes of an entire world. That's clearly what it was. Unacceptable. Esav conducts himself in the eyes of the whole world in an absolutely unacceptable manner. Regardless of the extent to which he has rejected Zaidi and rejects his father, and in fact the Gemara says that Avraham died then so that he 5 years earlier so that he should not see his enikel Esav yotze l'tarvut ra'ah becoming the evil person that he was to be. I don't think that the description I've given is really too fanciful. I took a look, before I left the house, I took a look into Rav Shamshon Ufal Hirsch. He also describes it, but describes it in a way as though this was childish conduct. He was a 15-year-old boy, a wild boy. I think it was a bit more than childish. Al kein korosh moedo. In his rejection of the house of Avraham and Yitzhak and everything that they stood for, made no difference that he was going to embarrass himself before the whole world. So therefore Yaakov turns to him and says, "Michroch hayom es becharot chali, sell your birthright to me." Vayomer Esav, so Esav said, "Hinei anochi halech lamut, I'm going to die, v'lama zeli becharot, what do I need the birthright for?" I believe that in fact the world is listening to this as well. Vayomer Yaakov, Yaakov said, "Shavoli, swear to me, kayom." By Yishav Alav, when he swore to him, by Yimker Becharato Yaakov, he sold his Bechoro to Yaakov. The Yaakov Natan Le Esav Lechem Unizid Atoshim, Yaakov gave Esav bread and the lentils. By Yochel he ate, by Yeshin and he drank. By Yochel, by Yelich he got up and he went. By Yidaz Esav Rab Bechora, Esav shamed and embarrassed the birthright. Now, here there's one point that I want to make. It's an important point in terms of understanding other psukim and parshiot in Torah. I'm not going to go into giving examples. There are a number of very fascinating ones. But it has to be said here, and I believe that Rav Shamshon Ufal Hirsch says it. We're always left with the problem. It seems by a superficial reading of the psukim as though Yaakov is, to use a dictionary word, he is Jewing Esav. Right? Isn't that like to... That's what the dictionary says. Read, see what the dictionary says on the word Jew. To fool somebody, to get something out of somebody, that's to Jew him. It would seem that this is what Yaakov is doing. His brother is dying from hunger. So the picture that you might have is, okay, sell me your birthright, Esav. Sell me your birthright. No. Take a whiff of this. Good. Lechem, nizid atashim. Until, of course, he has to eat. So he says, okay, I'll sell the bechorah to you. One word one word totally shatters that way of looking at the parsha. It's absolutely wrong. In this pasuk that we just learned, the beginning of the pasuk is V'Yaakov Natan, and Yaakov gave. Why doesn't it say Vayitain Yaakov? Couldn't it be written in one of two ways? Vayitain Yaakov and Yaakov gave? What's the difference between Vayitain Yaakov and V'Yaakov Natan? What's the difference between the two? V'Yaakov Natan is past perfect. He had given to him. V'Yaakov Natan, Yaakov had given to him more than he asked and had given it to him earlier. Even before all of the negotiations began, he had given to him lechem, bread, nezid, adoshim. He conducted himself the way a brother would conduct himself. All that he had to do afterwards was save the dignity and the honor of the family. And therefore, he says, sell me your birthright. But just the positioning of this word, Natan, is already the clue to understand what really is taking place over here. It does not mean that after he sold it and after he swore to him, only then and only then, does Yaakov give him to eat. The Yaakov Natan, Yaakov had already given him to eat. There is another interesting thing about this parsha. If one would read the parsha from beginning to end, without Medrash, without Rashi, the Torah really is being very, very good to Esav. Who emerges as the wronged one? By a superficial reading of the parsha, the one who emerges as the wronged one is Esav. Takes his bechara, he's going to steal the brachos later on. Who is the only one in the Seder who cries? Who is Esav cries? Esav is the one who says, Tate, Leiden, don't you have a bracha left for me? By Yitzhak, he cries out, Zaka Gedola Umara. What Torah is saying is, if you want to really see how bad Esav is, you're going to have to look at the psukim very carefully. Otherwise, in a sense, Torah is not condemning Esav. What Torah is doing is letting Esav condemn himself. You have to look carefully. You have to read the psukim carefully in order to understand it. Let's go further. By Yidav Baretz, there was a famine in the land. Yehuvad HaRav HaRishon, aside from the first great famine, was the one that happened when Avram came into Eretz Yisrael, and then he had to go down to Egypt. Asher hoya b'mei Avram, aside from that famine that was in the days of Avram, by Yelech Yitzchak el Avimelech Melech Plishtim Geror, Yitzchak went to Avimelech, the king of Plishtim, to Geror. By Yedo El of Hashem, and God appeared to him by Yom, and he said to him, Al Tereid Mitzrayim. He was going to go in the footsteps of his father, just as his father had gone down to Mitzrayim, he too was going to go down to Mitzrayim. God tells him, Al Tereid Mitzrayim, on the famous Rashi, Chazal, the Medrash, tell us that, Yitzchak, you are an Ola Temima. You are the one who was brought on the Akedah. You are holy. Ein Chutzla Oretz Kedaila Chutzla Oretz is no place for you. Incidentally, there is another Medrash. Other Medrash says that Yitzchak, also the fact that he was born in Eretz Yisrael. Because he was born in Eretz Yisrael, that's reason for him not to go out to Chutzlars. Don't go out. Shchon Baretz Asher Omar Eilecha. Dwell in the land that I will say to you. Shchon Baretz, beautiful Medrash. Asei bo shchuna. Make a neighborhood. Have a zoreya, have a noteya. Plant seeds, plant sapling, work the land. That's what you should do. Gur Baretz Hazos, live in this land. Ve'ayim imchon, I will be with you. Va'avorachekon, and I will bless you. Ki lechol zarecha etenet kol harotzot ha'el, to you and your children I will give all of these lands. Va'kimoti et hashvua shenishbati l'Avram avicha. And I will establish the oath that I swore to your father Avram. If we hear Beit Yitzchak Kachol V'Hashmaim, I'm going to make your children as many and as great, as outstanding, the Netziv,
and we're going to rely heavily on the Netziv. Netziv says that over here, when he is told that your children are going to be kechol pei hashamayim, it's not talking about the numbers, because that was already told to Avram, your children will be ka'afar ha'aretz, like the dust of the earth, kachol asher al shnat hayam, like the sand at the seashore. He says the blessing over here of kechol pei hashamayim is that wherever Jews will be on the face of this earth, they are going to be outstanding in all areas of life, completely out of proportion to their number. There are always going to be Jews who are going to be great in all fields, completely and totally out of proportion. And we've seen it. We see it 4,000 years later that this is so. The blessing of Kol Kli Hashamayim, he says, Jews will be unique, very, very special people, shining brilliantly, Kol Kli Hashamayim. Natatin, I will give your children at Kol HaRotzotel, all these lands, all of the nations of the world are going to be blessed through your children, be it science, technology, medicine, in every area, art, music, in all of these areas, Jews are going to be unique. They're going to be special. They're going to be outstanding, and they're going to bring blessing, l'kol goyei ha'aretz, to all of the people of the land. Because Avram had listened to me, and he kept my mitzvos, my statutes, and my laws. We have to get down now, with the time remaining to us, to see the unique contribution of Yitzchak. The fact is that Yitzchak is a subject of a lot of discussion. Yitzchak, in a sense, is problematic because, you know, Avram is the great trailblazer, the intellectual giant, the one who brings a message to the world of a one invisible God. Yaakov is the one who builds the Jewish family, 12 tribes who each become great in their own right. Yitzchak sort of seems, if we only look at things superficially, seems to be lost, how would they say here, Bein HaKisaot, between Avraham on one side and Yaakov on the other side. Not so. We have to get a number of insights into Yitzchak. I recall once having heard must be about 20 years ago, a lecture by Eli Wiesel on the personality of Yitzchak. I was deeply moved. I was deeply moved by what he said. In this parasha, we're going to see Yitzchak planting, digging wells, digging more wells, digging the wells of his father, digging new wells of his own. It doesn't seem as though he's doing anything unique or outstanding. He described Yitzchak. Yitzchak is the survivor. Yitzchak is the one who has emerged from near death. He was the one who had been brought as the Ola, and he emerges the survivor alive. The greatest accomplishment of the survivor is to be able to live a normal, a healthy, and a productive life afterwards. All of the simple things of life become tremendous accomplishments for a Yitzchak. Yitzchak represents the profound strength that Klal Yisrael has, regardless of what will happen to them. They're always able to rebuild. Never despair. Why were so many civilizations lost when a civilization reached a point where it simply was too exhausted to continue? Had lost all of its ability to survive, it disappeared from the face of the earth. And so many civilizations did. What is the koach, the strength of Klal Yisrael to continue? It's the koach of Yitzchak. Yitzchak is the one who emerges from the harrowing experience of the Akedah, nearly consumed in the fires on the altar, and he sets out to have a family, to plow
to plant, to harvest, to dig wells, do all of the things that are necessary for a healthy life in which he functions at top level. This is the Korach of Klal Yisrael. Yitzchak is the one who put it into the genes of the Jewish people to be able to survive, never despair. Yitzchak, according to the Netziv, is also the one who experiences all of the manifestations and the phenomena of anti-Semitism that will be seen throughout history. Let me take you through a few more psukim and you'll see precisely what happened. Sheni. Vayeshev Yitzchak b'Gror, Yitzchak lived in Gror. Vayishalu anshei ha'makom liyishto, the people of the place asked about his wife, and he said she is my sister, because he was afraid to say that she is his wife, lest the people of the place kill him, al-Rivka, because of Rivka, because Tovat Marehi, she was very beautiful. Vayihiki orchul o'shom ha'yamim, and it came to pass when the days that he was there became long. The Netziv says it wasn't a long time, but when somebody who is unwelcome is around, then you know what? The few days become very long. And the Netziv obviously is looking at the word lo, right? The days became long to him. What does it mean to him? It could have simply said, Vayihiki Orchu Hayamim, he was there for a long time. Orchu Lo Hayamim means that as far as Avimelech was concerned, he's been here already too long. He has worn out his welcome. Vayaskef Avimelech Melech Plishtim Badachalon, and Avimelech, the king of Plishtim, looked through the window. Vayarin Sovina Yitzchak Mitzachek et Rivka Ishto. Yitzchak is conducting himself with his wife Rivka like she is a wife and not a sister. Incidentally, what's also very fascinating is when we talk about Yitzchak being the one who never despairs, that's precisely the meaning of his name. He is able to laugh in the face of tragedy. He is able to laugh it off and go further. The Kelech of Yitzchak is Tzchok. Tzchok of a very positive nature. Tzchok is a dangerous thing. Tzchok can be very negative. Esav was mitzachek. Yishmael was mitzachek. Jews around the Egel were mitzachek. Yitzchak is the positive laugh. Able to laugh off the tzaris and go for it. So here it is, Melech Plishtim. Incidentally, I don't believe, of course, that Melech Plishtim was looking through the window. Melech Plishtim obviously sent his agents, and if he sends his agents, the Torah wants to show us how shameful this was. They report to him, and the Torah writes it as though he's looking through the window. Avimelech called to Yitzchak, and he said to him, "Behold, here is your wife. Why did you tell me she's your sister?" So Yitzchak said, "Because I was afraid lest I die because of her." Avimelech says, "What is it that you did to us? One of the people may have lived with her, and we would have brought upon us terrible sin." Avimelech commanded all of the people, so saying, "Whoever touches this man or his wife shall die." Netziv has a pshat that's different than all the others. It would seem as though he's saying, "Let no one dare touch them." That's not what Avimelech did. He says, "Hanogea b'ishazeh," he wants, negia means contact. He wants nobody to have any contact with Yitzchak or Rivka. As far as he is concerned, they are Hanogea b'ishazeh. What's happening now, first time that a Jew is being set apart. In a sense, Yitzchak and Rivka are in a ghetto, which means it becomes now near impossible for them to make a living or to do anything. So what happens? By Yisrael Yitzchak Baretz Ahi, Yitzchak planted in that land. It was a year of famine. By Yimtzo Bashana Ahi, in that year, what he found was Meyor Sha'arim, 100 times the amount they should have come out of the field. By Yivorachei Hashem, because God blesses him.
Here what we're beginning to see is that with everything working against the Jew, he has really no visible means of support. He's going to be able to achieve wealth even under those trying conditions. And what happens now is, Vayigdal Ha'ish, the man became great, Vayelech Holoch V'Gadol, and he became even greater, Ad Kigadal Miod, until he became very great. The greatness over here, we're talking simply dollars and cents, money. He becomes very, very wealthy. And it's fascinating that the Pasuk uses the word becoming great, becoming wealthy. Three times it's used in the Pasuk. Wealth that comes in a single instant of time. Wealth that comes at one moment can be extremely intoxicating. One has to learn how to live with and how to handle wealth. The wealth comes to Yitzchak gradually. And now what happens is, everybody needs grain. It's a year of famine and hunger. The one who has grain now is Yitzchak. So they have to do business with him. So what happens now is, Vayihilo Mikne Tzonu Mikne Vata, he now has all sorts of sheep that he has purchased, and cattle, Vavuda Rabba, and a lot of servants. And here it comes. Vayikanu Oto Plishtim, the Plishtim, now jealousy. Jealousy. They have ostracized him. Despite that, he has become wealthy. They now are jealous of him. And what happens? Jealousy is so powerful that those who are jealous of him are going to become his enemies who hate him. And more than that, in their blind hatred, they're going to do things which are the exact opposite of their very best interests. They're going to be cutting their noses off to spite their face. We've seen it. We've experienced it. For the last 25 years, I was always worried. When will the Arabs become smart and say, we recognize the state of Israel. We want to live in absolute peace with the state of Israel. They could have had their own state or autonomy years ago, and I don't know what would have happened. Frightening to think what would have happened. They were constantly taking decisions that ran counter to their very best interests. I pray that something will happen along the process that has begun. But what do? All of the wells that had been dug by the servants of his father, Bimei Avram, in the days of his father Avram, Sitmum Plishtim, they closed them by the Malum Offer, and they filled them up with earth. Can you understand? We're talking about a land that lives on water. Water rights are extremely important. We're talking about a year when there's a drought. Every bit of water is precious. And they go ahead and take a good well and close it up. And many wells, the wells that were dug by Avram, they close them up. What they're doing is, because of their jealousy and their hatred, they're doing things that run completely counter to their best interests. Avimelech said to Yitzchak, Leich Mei Imamu. Here we have the first expulsion of a Jew. And this is the way the Netziv describes it. Avimelech says to Yitzchak, Leich Mei Imamu, go from us. Ki otzamta mimenu miyod. Otzamta mimenu miyod. Those of you who have an English translation, I think all of the English translations say, Ki otzamta mimenu miyod, because you have become much stronger than us, much mightier. That's one way. Let's take a look at that word mimenu again. Mimenu has two meanings. Mimenu can mean then, go away from us because you have become stronger than us. And mimenu has another meaning. Go ki otzanta, because you've become mighty, mimenu, from him. Where did you get it all? Where did you get your wealth? You took it all from us. Leich me'imanu ki otzamta mimenu, from him. You took the last penny away from the population that was living here. Again, so we have the first expulsion. We have the Jew who's being thrown out because he's the one who's caused all of the terrible suffering and the problems here. Later on in the parasha, Avimelech is going to have to come back to Yitzchak in order to enter into a treaty with him. Do you know what they learn here? They learn that the expulsion of the Jew is always going to cost the expeller a great deal more than it's going to cost the Jew. And we know that. Wherever Jews, from whatever country they were expelled, that country went through a decline following the expulsion of Jews. For 500 years, Spain didn't mean anything until Jews came back last Thursday. In 1492, Spain was the great power of the world. Can you imagine it? The Spanish Armada. We didn't learn history. Who discovered the New World? Who were all the great adventurers and discoverers and conquerors? Cortez, Ponce de Leon, I don't even remember the names. Magellan, De Soto, Pontiac was an Indian. All right. All the great discoverers. Who opened up the New World? It was Spain. Spain was a mighty power in the world. It's been a few hundred years since Spain has meant anything. The greatest moment that they've had in 500 years was the last week. The whole world finally took a look at Spain. And as I say, only because Jews finally came back, even for a little while. If you go through all other countries in the world, you will find the same thing is true. Babel was a major power when Jews were there. Jews have always contributed to the societies in which they live. Following an expulsion, and it happened, if you read the history of the Middle Ages, expulsion happened constantly. Jews were being thrown out of one city, they went to another one. Years later, the king of the first city would again permit Jews to return. It always involved the fact that as long as Jews were there, Hidborchu Bizarachov called Goye Horetz. This is the blessing that's given to Yitzchak, that all of the nations of the world, all of those countries are going to be blessed through your presence. Lech Be'imanu, leave us because you have become wealthy from us, is the beginning of the decline of Avimelech. In addition to the fact that he has broken the promise that was made to Avram. Vayelech misham Yitzchak, and Yitzchak went from there. Vayicham v'nachal Gror, and he encamped in Nachal Gror, and he lived there. Here the Netziv says, we learn one very important lesson of Jewish history. As Jews leave Anatevka, it's most probably the darkest day in their lives. Begin to wander, go off elsewhere. Do you know what happens when Yitzchak leaves here? Yitzchak is going to grow in a way that he never did in Gror. Says the Netziv, Umizel Amadnu, from this we learn Derech HaGolos, the way of exile. Shahakodish Baruch Mahapech Machshavas, God is the one who changes all sorts of thoughts. Umashe Nid Elonu, what seemed to us as though they're doing something terrible to us, it turns out to be the great blessing. Kama Pamim Hu Bolet Tova Achazman. He goes elsewhere, and you know what? The fact that he's gone elsewhere, best thing that ever happened to him. And that's the development of the parasha. Yitzchak goes and he digs more wells of water, opens up the wells that his father had dug. In other words, he's now rebuilding, starting in a sense from scratch all over again. The servants of Yitzchak, they dug in the valley. They found new clear water. And there was a confrontation between the shepherds of Gror with the shepherds of Yitzchak, Lema, and they said, Lanu Hamayim, the water belongs to us.
Yikro Shem HaBe'er Esek, he called the name of the Be'er Esek, he hit Astuimo because they contended with him. If they dig another well, Vayorivu Gamaleo, and they argued about that one too. Vayikro Shmo Sitna, the second well he called Sitna, hatred. You know what the difference between the first well and the second well is? When he dug the first well, and they contended and they argued with him, at least they said something. They said to him, Lanu Hamayim, the water is ours. In this pasuk, they just want the well, and they don't even dignify the struggle by telling him, it's our water. They don't even dignify it by saying, we have some kind of a claim to it. Therefore, he calls it Sitna. This is absolute hatred. So now what happens? Here he moved. He's been expelled. He's struggling now all over again. He's digging the wells. They fight over it. But then the end is, Vayatek Mishon, he moves even further away. Vayachbo Be'er Acheret, he digs another well. V'lo Ravu Aleh, and they didn't argue about it. Vayikra Shemo Rechovot, that one he called Rechovot. Vayomer, and he said, Ki Ata Hirchiv Hashem Lanu Ufarinu Va'aretz. The end is that he will finally make it. Now, yes, God will give us the opportunity to spread out in the land. I just want to conclude again with a quote from the Nitziv. Basically, as we point out, Yitzchak is the one who represents the Jew in Golus. Though Yitzchak, of course, is undergoing all of this while he is in Eretz Yisrael, but all of the events of his life are the forerunner of what the events of Jewish history are going to be like. All of this is an indication of what's going to happen in the time of exile. The hagerushin, the expulsions, gormim kama dvarim, they cause many things. From one Jew they will steal with some kind of a claim saying this belongs to us. From the next Jew they're going to steal his wealth and his property without even dignifying it with a claim. And then the Jew succeeds in the place that he's been expelled to, yoter me'asher haya, even more than he than before. And he says, Gam hagerush, and this is interesting, Gam hagerush, the expulsion causes Jews to multiply. Ata hirchiv Hashem lanu, God has made things brought to us, uforinu ba'aretz, and we will multiply in the land. It may very well be part of this psychology of the Jew, like bedafka, as we have it in Mitzrayim, kasher yanu oto, the more Jews were caused to suffer in Mitzrayim, the more they continue to multiply. In a sense, it is this Yitzchak syndrome of an ability to stand up against all odds, never to despair, to laugh tzachas in the face, be able to go further, and bedafka to grow, to develop, to multiply, regardless of what the difficulties are. So that Yitzchak is not just the bridge between Avraham and Yaakov. Yitzchak, in a sense, is the one who gives Klal Yisrael the strength to survive through history.